Welcome to the Subtle Cane Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, broadcasting from the Aorta of America, beautiful festival city, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where we pump out reason and pierce through the propaganda. Here we go. Today is Sunday, August 21st, 2022. Let's go once again to our news model correspondent, Brock Tanslacks. Brock, what can you tell us about the current situation as you've been instructed to share?
Well, Aaron, to try and put it in terms and invoke the desired emotional responses we're looking for, doom. That's right, you heard it correctly, doom. There are more details coming forthwith, but for now, I hope the listeners appreciate that there is war and pestilence, starvation and suffering, and beyond that, suffice to say, the sky is literally falling. Back to you, Aaron.
Excellent reporting, Brock. I sense an Edward R. Murrow Award, or at the very least, an Edward Bernays Award in someone's near future. That's all for now, folks. We will keep you updated as scant and irrational details come to our attention. Stay tuned and anxious for further updates. If you're new to the Subtle Cane Podcast, thank you for gracing us with your virtual presence. If you're a returning listener, thank you for your continued support. It is much appreciated. This is episode 33 of the Subtle Cane Podcast, Eyes Without a Face. I can remember my grandpa saying that he would look in the mirror sometimes and wonder who the old guy was looking back at him. Because he felt like the same person on the inside, but the reflection that he saw didn't really match what was in his head. And I admit that I now have that same thing happen to me at times. Not that I'm an old man, yet. Just that the years have started to show on the outside more than my brain can process on the inside. Aging is kind of a surreal experience. If I can feel detached from my inner self by looking in a mirror, how much more can my self-image be distorted by living vicariously through a virtual representation of myself online? Food for thought. Who we are on the inside can be a far cry from what people perceive on the outside. Apart from the darker aspects of our personality that we all have and wish to keep concealed from others, there is an uninhibited personality that we have suppressed over the years as a response to external stimuli, such as negative and positive reinforcements of behavior, or social conditioning. And I'm not saying that all social conditioning is bad, just bringing it to attention, because it would be ludicrous, and we would all feel quite comfortable soiling ourselves and crying whenever we didn't get our way. Wait a minute. That does seem to be trending on some level. In all seriousness, though, I'm not here to pessimistically deconstruct all of human existence, just trying to see the forest for the trees, as they say. What's important to do is make a distinction between healthy and unhealthy influences on our thoughts and behavior. Some are extremely helpful and benefit us as individuals, and some are unhelpful, and some are probably rather benign. For an easy example of this, think about the last wedding you were at. There's always those toddlers and younger children that boldly venture out on the dance floor and unleash a torrent of disorienting, uncoordinated dance moves that we pass off as cute or innocuous. Then on the other hand, there are adults who gyrate around in curious ways that make us cringe. Not so cute anymore, is it? Like that Seinfeld episode where Elaine tries dancing. Be it helpful, unhelpful, or entirely benign, we're all influenced by those around us in ways that we may or may not recognize. That's something I want to address today. And that got me thinking about how much what people perceive about us from the outside might influence how we perceive ourselves on the inside. Of course, there's a multitude of opinions, research, and publications that address this issue from developmental psychology to neurochemistry. There are many ways that we either are physiologically or psychologically affected by the people we interact with. I thought it prudent to address here, in light of all the overall uncertainty and anxiety we've experienced and witnessed in society, with the abandonment of tradition and the introduction of vapid ideologies such as postmodernism, and just as a general barometer of where we might be in each of our own lives. Social media is something that many utilize and believe to be benign or even beneficial. Of course, in the back of our heads, I think we all know that there are some pretty negative outcomes. Certainly we've heard of them if we haven't specifically experienced them. There are benign and beneficial aspects of the technology, of course, but less attention is placed on the darker side of it. Apart from the messaging apps within the media, do we even consider really what's happening while engaged in social media as communication? It is. Whether the active communication of direct messages or the passive communication of how we present ourselves, it's all communication. So I want to talk about social media today. I can recall C.S. Lewis writing about how he didn't have the particular personality traits that seemed to coincide with a weakness for gambling. And so he felt unqualified and maybe even unjustified speaking about that particular vice. I've shared here on multiple occasions that I don't have any social media. And one might make the argument that I'm also unqualified or maybe even unjustified in any criticism of it. And that would be a valid argument if I had never had any social media or hadn't been affected by it. I have, and I have been. I chose to delete my accounts because I saw how it might negatively impact me and how it negatively impacted people I cared about. It's not to say that I don't have the personality traits that lend themselves to negative outcomes when using the platforms myself. I certainly do. Today we're going to focus on how social media impacts self-perception, consciously and unconsciously. In other words, how much are people influenced by the pressure to conform to the virtual representation of themselves that exists online? Let's start with the amalgamation of positive and negative reinforcement we experience online. It'll be kind of a thread that runs throughout this whole talk. There's a consolidation of perception we have about who we are as individuals, or more accurately stated, who we are as personalities. And the difference between individuals and personalities is a distinction we're actually going to spend more time on down the road, one that Nikolai Berdyaev made quite profoundly in his book Slavery and Freedom. How often do you think about what other people think about you? That's a good question to ask ourselves. Another good question to ask ourselves is, how often do we think about what other people think about us affecting how we think about ourselves? And yet another good question to ask ourselves is, how often do we allow these questions to go unasked? Let's start with the first question. How often do we think about what other people think about us? And when I say think about, I mean, how much time do you spend actively considering what other people think about you? This can be broken down into a subset of questions, really. How often do we think about what other people think about our character? How often do we think about what other people think about our actions and what they say about our character? And how often do we think about what other people think about our appearance? Is our appearance an outward manifestation of our character? Of course, we could keep doing this all day, but I think that's enough for now. How much are these things intertwined? We're told not to stereotype people. And certainly the old adage not to judge a book by its cover holds true to a large extent. But we must admit that we can tell quite a bit about a person by observing, let's say, their clothing, their hygiene, how they speak, how they carry themselves. Without this mechanism of observation, we'd be quite vulnerable to predators and of all types. The problem is, of course, when we ascribe value or a lack of value to someone based on those attributes. As nurses, for example, we have to assess people from the time they walk in a room to the time they leave, and all for the sake of getting a complete picture of a person in order to exercise clinical judgment. We're all always judging those around us. Whether we like the way that sentence sounds or not, it is true. We all know this. The tech companies who created social media know this too. That's why there are these filters to mask blemishes and enhance features of ourselves in pictures. Well, where's all this going, Aaron? I'll tell you. We're in a culture that I like to call the billboard culture. Everyone has a billboard for themselves on their social media accounts. Some spend an undue amount of time cultivating their online persona in an effort to glamorize and give the impression of fulfillment and meaning, excitement and adventure that probably doesn't actually exist in the mundane lives the majority of us live. My mom used to always talk about how life is hard and most of it's boring and repetitive and hard work. And I found that to be true. But we want adventure and we want novelty. Of course we do. It helps break up the monotony of life. And there's nothing wrong with supplementing the grind of daily life with some levity and novelty. The problem lies, as with most things, when we make that goal our end goal, the novelty and the levity, the amusement. We're going to break that down a little more. But before we do, I just wanted to take a short break. You'll notice that there are no ads asking you to speak to your doctor and ask whether some new and poorly tested drug is right for you. That's because the Subtle Cane podcast operates on the value for value system. If you find value in what I'm doing here, you have the opportunity to return value in the form of time, talent, or treasure. Links in the show notes will bring you to the show's Venmo and PayPal accounts if you're willing and able to contribute to the effort. You can also email me at subtlecane@protonmail.com. That's subtlecane@protonmail.com. And I will gladly get back to you with any questions, comments, or concerns. Please consider rating and reviewing the show on whatever platform you're listening, as that helps me significantly when others are looking for a new show to check out. And please share the show with friends and family. I've done zero advertising for this show. Zero. And I can say that I'm humbled by the amount of people that have at least given a listen. The Subtle Cane podcast has been able to reach ears in 54 countries at this point. Really amazing. Solely on the word of mouth and interviews. Speaking of interviews, I have one coming up this week with a really interesting and impressive gentleman who my producer in Houston was gracious enough to introduce me to. My next episode will feature this innovative and intellectual young author. No spoilers, though. No spoilers. Wherever you are and whoever you are, I hope you know how very much it means to me that you've shared some of your precious time with me in pursuit of truth. And I sincerely hope that you're not amused. Amusement being the absence of thoughtful contemplation. Let's get back to it. Remember how we spoke about the different elements that, when combined, allow for an atmosphere where mass formation can easily take hold? If not, please refer to episode 13, Free Fallen. Or for a really good read, pick up Matthias Desmond's book, The Psychology of Totalitarianism. Let's rehash a couple of those elements quickly. A lack of social bonds. I've talked about how the virtual world does not provide the same kind of connection that time spent in person affords. This is strongly backed by evidence-based research. If you're interested, there are some links in the show notes for more information on the topic, although it should be obvious when one takes a step back and thinks about it. How many of us are living under the illusion that our online relationships are accurate representations of our social well-being? Probably not many of us. A Facebook friend's not really a friend, right? So, a lack of social bonds. Behind our well-protected and highly edited online profiles are our everyday selves. And somewhere behind that, our true selves reside. Layers and layers of insulation from the realities of true connection. It's like that movie Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio. How many real and genuine interactions do we have online every day? How many do we have in person? I'm not talking about the small talk at work either, or the chatter at the bar, or the brisk handshakes and greetings of Sunday morning church service. I'm talking about real and meaningful interactions. Valid question we must ask ourselves. The purpose of this line of inquiry is to bring attention to the fact that many of us are craving true and meaningful social bonds, and we're not getting them. We're not getting them. In an effort to find them, people turn to social media. What that does is create a space where it is no longer the real us that is interacting with others. And we're not interacting with real others, but a sanitized version that can be manipulated in a way that creates a billboard for our lives that doesn't actually represent who we are. The result is more profound than one might initially presume, I argue. It's also important to note that when we seek our social bonds through these sanitized versions of ourselves via a medium that promotes not only outward deception, if you think about it, if only for the sake of appearance, but also inward deception. I think that it's crucial to point out the difference between who we are and who we wish to be. There's something to another old adage, fake it till you make it. That can be helpful when starting a new job or overcoming the inevitable imposter syndrome that people feel when they're granted a position of authority or operate under a professional license for the first time. It's not a great recipe for daily life, though, in the way that it is being manifested in society, though. Online personas not only are false in the sense that they create a discrepancy between who we are to others and who we are in daily life, they also can cause us to break with the reality of what our lives are actually like. We may or may not be explicitly aware of the impact that this has on our lives, but I assure you, we try and conform to the personas we exude in public. This can cause a profound loss of meaning and a distance between our aspirations and our reality. Let's look at the element of mass formation related to a lack of meaning or meaning making in our lives. This is an interesting aspect of social media that we contend with as well. Likes and dislikes, thumbs up and thumbs down, positive and negative feedback that we internalize and either avoid or strive for. Jeremy Weissman's book, The Crowdsourced Panopticon, does a wonderful job of expounding on this aspect of social media. People who post things on social media desire a positive response to what they post. Of course, it's only human. We want to be liked and loved and accepted. Of course we do. Of course we do. In real life, or IRL as the kids are saying, people are able to read nonverbal cues that not only consciously and unconsciously moderate our speech and behavior, but also physiologically affect our limbic system in a way that profoundly impacts the interactions we have. That doesn't happen the same way online. It's not the same. No matter how many advertising executives and social media campaigns try and sell their product as genuine social interaction, it is not and cannot be. There are so many nonverbal stimuli that we exchange through interpersonal communication that can't be reproduced, down to the pheromones we release and the electromagnetic frequencies that we emit while interacting. It's really something. Read Daniel Goleman's book, Social Intelligence, for a really great breakdown of the physiological mechanisms of social interaction. There's a lot of good information out there about that, but I thought that book was interesting. It's a few years old now, but still very valid, I think. There's a link in the show notes to a short video that features Daniel Goleman as he discusses the way our brains are wired for communication in the burgeoning field of social neuroscience. So what does the likes-dislikes paradigm do for us online? Well, like Skinner's experiments with animals, we see that positive affirmation of certain posts and opinions will motivate us to repeat behaviors and recite narratives so that we can reap the rewards. And what are the rewards for positive affirmation? Well, the main one, and so I don't get too long-winded here about it, is dopamine. The same neurochemical mechanism that is activated in heroin addicts when they use is activated by positive feedback from social media. It provides positive reinforcement that creates neural pathways, which will cause not only a psychological addiction to conformity, but also a physiological addiction to it. And of course, we have the same mechanisms in place when we interact in person. Certainly, dopamine is a factor when talking about in-person communication, but there are a host of other factors that create a synchronicity not achievable in the virtual environment. Now, taking the reverse mechanism into play, we see that negative reactions to social media posts, pictures, and opinions will disincentivize us in a way that creates neural pathways, which will inspire an innate rejection of thoughts and ideas that go against the narratives most cherished in the virtual spaces. This is truly manufactured consent, to crib a line from Chomsky. Let's take it one step further here. Now let us assume that the social media platforms have a completely hands-off policy with their subscribers. You can still see how conformity would be physiologically and psychologically programmed into a populace engaged on these platforms, and mob rule would be the most likely outcome. Once you've been thoroughly trashed for a wrong opinion on social media, you are shunned in a way that the real world can't hold a candle to. One wrong word or phrase, one wrong poorly timed response to a post can be life-altering. Rather than a small group of people in your immediate hearing, you can share your worst moments with a host of people with access to your profile for time immemorial. And what you've said or done can be shared endlessly. You can be convicted and sentenced in the court of public opinion en masse. It would be purely democratic in nature. That might sound pleasant and righteous if you believe that unfettered democracy is a good thing, but I agree with Ben Franklin's assertion, one that our friend James Corbett has alluded to many times. That is, democracy is two wolves and a sheep arguing about what's for dinner. Of course, we know, especially as of the last few years with the social justice warriors and the COVID narrative, that social media platforms are anything but impartial and that they are specifically and actively engaged in censorship and quote-unquote content moderation. Now the real problem comes to the fore. We have algorithms and ideologues hacking and slashing at unwanted opinions. This effectively programs users' brains to accept certain narratives and reject others in a way that literally could be described as mind control. Add to that the fact that social media platforms generate their profits through advertising. Well, now we have corporate interests as well as the ideological interests programming our brains in a way that sidesteps our conscious ability to make decisions about what to believe and how to feel about certain topics and people. And just to add a little sugar to the top, government officials are actively coercing big tech companies to toe the proverbial line so that politicians are either lambasted or praised for their positions. It's hard to know just what dog we're talking about, but we know for sure that we're the tail. And the tail, my friends, is wagging away. When people log into their profiles and scroll through the feeds, they're doing so with a profile that doesn't really represent their true selves, while being actively and specifically targeted for programming by people who see them as a means to an end rather than an end in and of themselves. Unethical, unjust, and unworthy of your time and attention, in my humble opinion. And I don't expect that you'll all go out and delete your profiles on whatever platforms you have. Don't expect it. Not even asking it. Just thought it prudent to make these observations so that people think about the implications of what they are engaged in. And I understand that being able to message your friends and family is awesome, and seeing photos of your loved ones is convenient and helpful. Technology, though, as I've said many times before, is always a two-edged sword. There are positive aspects to the technology, but we just have to think about the whole picture. Maybe it's the skeptic in me, but I think there's value in this line of inquiry. I've spent a fair amount of time speaking to the importance of having a grounding force in our lives, a cornerstone on which the foundation of our meaning is built. I've also spent a fair amount of time arguing that the civilization that we are currently living in has actively dismantled so much of the traditional values that it was founded on that the overall effect has been a general unmooring from any true sense of meaning. When we rely on the crowd to offer praise or scorn in the form of thumbs up or down, we open ourselves to a level of influence and coercion that cannot be underestimated. Rather than a guiding force in our lives bringing meaning, we can outsource our meaning to the mob. A compass will not work in a field of magnets, for a clumsy analogy to our situation. If our sense of value is dependent on what others think of us, we're susceptible to being tossed around on the waves of any current, be that social justice movements, political ideologies, or marketing schemes. That's true for real-life, in-person interactions. How much more is that magnified by social media? How much are we aspiring to be the image we portray virtually? How can we really stay grounded when the fantasies of our online selves become more important than the realities of our flesh and blood? Maybe you think that's an embellishment of the situation, but I don't think it is. Watch the people around you and pay attention to how much time they spend discussing what they've seen on Facebook or Instagram or whatever your poison versus the real world. I think you'll find it quite disturbing once you really pay attention. As I said, I don't expect this little talk will cause you to delete your profiles, but I hope that you at least consider these words. At least consider the possibility that your thoughts and opinions on certain things may be more influenced by your use of social media than it's comfortable to admit or to face. That being said, I only mean to help, and my critical opinion of the technology isn't strictly academic. I did have a Facebook account at one time. I made the decision to delete it when I was overseas and something terrible happened back home. And the way that people jumped to conclusions about a close friend of mine and the reality of what actually had happened was so horrific that it just broke my heart. And it made me realize that the distance between the real and the virtual was further than I had ever imagined. So I don't speak from a place of superiority as someone who's never had social media. I did, but from a place of sincere empathy for all the people that are consciously and unconsciously coerced into believing something that isn't true or silenced for fear of reprisal. I haven't spent anywhere near the time this subject deserves, and perhaps we will revisit aspects of it soon. It's my hope that you found this productive and not judgmental in any way. Focus on the good. Seek out ways to engage people in the real world and keep your eyes on the road in front of you. I ask again, what brings meaning to your life? What is your true north? As a Christ follower, I have an example set before me of how I should conduct myself in life. I fail, often miserably, but the standard doesn't change with the whims of the mob. I don't know what your true north is, but I offer this small, humble piece of advice. If it isn't grounded in something that transcends the trends, then it will be much harder to ever truly know who you are apart from them. I end with this quote by Eric Fromm. Quote, "The fact that millions of people share the same vices does not make these vices virtues. The fact that they share so many errors does not make the errors to be truths. And the fact that millions of people share the same form of mental pathology does not make these people sane. For all you listening, you are valued, you are loved, and you are worthy. God bless, and good night."
Back once the fire's lit, let the embers glow and be done with it. I'm startled by my lack of fear as a world I love.